is RSVB Update, episode 422, recorded Friday, July 19th, 2013, an unexpected surprise. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSVB Update. We've got a fairly limited show for you guys this week, primarily because it is a maintenance week in Jagex land, and next week we got the big RS3 launch upcoming. So we're just going to talk a bit about the things that Jagex posted this week pertaining to the launch of RS3. And one of them was kind of surprising, but at the same time not for myself. So, shall we begin with the open beta update?
Sure. All right, open beta with RuneScape 3 under a week away. We've updated a new interface system beta so you can get a preview of the near future version that will replace the existing one on July 22nd.
And, you know, I've been thinking with regards to RS3 is that the new interface system for me is the best part of this update because the interface has remained so static for so long. It's about time we have something completely new. So without saying RS3, if I had to pick apart, the new interface system would be the things that I am most excited about. But anyways, a very interesting thing came with this news posting in the second paragraph, and I quote, "We've decided to keep the HTML5 game client in beta for the coming months. RS3 continues full steam ahead for launch on July 22nd with the epic Battle of Lumbridge content, new interface system, new audio system and music, upgraded cameras, and seasonal high scores." So, HTML5 remaining in beta, what do you think of that?
No, they basically haven't got enough people to iron out the kinks yet.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if people out there are going to believe this, but about a week and a half ago, I actually had a dream while I was sleeping that RuneScape 3 launched without the HTML5 component.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe me?
I believe you because you're the nerdy type to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of weird that I was thinking that this might happen, given that we've been seeing some strange things with the HTML5 portion of this, because, on both my iMac and desktop, I have perfect performance in most places, except for, of course, when we scale up the draw distance to high, but that's to be expected. So, but there have been some pretty odd things with it. Two of them that come to mind are that there's water missing in some places, like the Fremenic boat in the Lumbridge Swamp. And there is also a problem with the audio controls on the HTML5 client. It appears as though you can't mute audio or change audio levels in the client for some reason.
I was wondering why it wasn't working the other day. Because, you know, after I did my little mini party, I went to my house and Zant came over to my house to visit me in my throne room. And I was like, I can't click on you. And there was no white dot in my mini map at all. I couldn't right click on it to figure out who he was. If he had said anything, he could have been a freaking NPC for all I knew.
But how does this relate to audio?
Oh, well, basically I was fiddling with the audio, trying to turn the thing down, and I was like, did I do something to bring this thing guy up here? Because literally appeared out of nowhere. I was like, this is weird.
Yeah, so I mean there's lots of little things going on like that in HTML5. But regardless, HTML5 is a remarkable improvement in the quality of the game graphics and whatnot. So I highly encourage everybody, if you haven't already, to log into the HTML5 beta and see how it runs on your system, because even though as you just running the beta, you are providing invaluable data to JAGX in order to improve the performance of it. And of course, that'll benefit everyone in the long run. So if you haven't, I just say, if you're doing things where you're not at the danger of dying, just use the HTML5 client, test things out, and report bugs if you see them, because we really want HTML5, at least I do, to evolve with RuneScape and be the next logical step for the game client. So so do your part and be a good beta tester.
There's still some things I need to work at, but it's still... It's kind of been a lot more stable for me when I went in it last time.
Yeah,
It loaded a lot faster.
Yeah, and I mean that's good. That's what should be happening with it. So with this, people are wondering, what does this mean for RS3? This, of course, means that RS3 will launch with the new interface, except you'll just play it in Java like you've been playing it for so long, and you know that's not really a problem, and there's nothing wrong with Java as it is, and just makes the experience a little bit better in terms of frame rate. So I'm personally not worried about this, and like I said a week and a half ago, I just had a feeling in the bones that this was going to be happening.
You're such a nerd, Shane. But, so, you know, one of these days we should pop the question, name some RS games you have had, and let's see what people say.
Yeah,
I've had my fair share.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I actually remember I had a dream back in high school that I was going down there and I saw nothing but fire giants in the basement. I wanted to kill them, but I was scared of their big green, big red glowing eyes. You think I'm kidding, great. Too. I wasn't.
No.
What's funny, though, they were still RuneScape Classic versions, too.
Oh, wow. And you know what those things
exactly
used to look like.
They're exactly 1D.
Yep. All right. So, RS3 launches on Monday without the HTML5 component, but the Java version will work just fine. If you want to get a jump on everything, you know what you can do this weekend? Log into the new interface beta and play around with it and try and find an interface that works for you. Find something that you're comfortable with and something that you're able to survive with. This week I posted on RuneWire a modified version of the interface that I sent in for the interface contest. The reason I did a modified version of this one is because I discovered that the action bar will work better for me at the bottom of the screen. So that's the way I did it. And I actually like this because it utilizes the full screen. It's designed to work in 1080p or bigger. So that's the caveat for that. But
you think we should do some... Oh, sorry.
No.
That's a thought. You think we should kind of make this little thing in the forum? God, how about, well, we already did the redesign thing already, for officially.
What do you mean?
I was just thinking we throw ideas around, have people send in screenshots of how they want to do their interface and why they have it this way. Let's do a little spoof of a competition, huh, Shane?
Yeah, so we could do that.
Have people send in their interface, how they like it, and send it to me by, let's do August 23rd, and whoever wins gets 5 mil from me.
Well, that's generous.
Yes, that get people into the beta more often, eh?
Yeah, sure, good idea. So,
5 mil from me.
You can post the instructions for this in the show notes, because of course you just thought of this right now, so we don't have any instructions ready to go. But regardless,
PN.
All right. So following from this, we got the community roundup for July 18th. And guess what's coming up in the future? Guess what the next task set is going to be?
Task set. How to play with the interface?
No, the next task set is going to be a Daemonheim task set. And Maz is looking for help in designing this task set. So if you have any ideas of what you'd like to see in such a thing, you can post it in the thread linked in the community roundup. Do you have any ideas since you've frequent that area frequently?
Mm-hmm. Make a full set of armor, melee armor, range armor, and magic armor using only the materials provided in the dungeon. And then all of it. Well, let's do 60 and 99.
Wow.
those get people up to 99 smithing a lot faster.
Oh, that would be so painful.
I'll be super elite dungeon then. Or max out your rings, probably gonna be one of them.
I wonder if there would be an elite option in that task set to completely unlock all the floors in Daemonheim.
No, I don't really do that. I say maybe pay off floors. Make it like your C1 equivalent. That'll probably, annoy a lot of the bots.
What do you mean?
Most people do, after they've reached a certain level, they only do C1s up to a certain floor.
Right. Because
the lower ones don't give you any experience that's worth the time. So maybe a good idea to have people let you pay it off. And if you pay it through like this, it's a little mini money sink, and they're happy because they get it done in about 30 seconds. And they get a little bit of experience, not as much as they actually do it, but it's still a little bit. Basically, it's negligible anyway.
Sure, that would work, I guess.
And that was put a nice little dimple hole in those bots people. All those clans.
All right. So anyways, if you want to suggest this, go to the thread listed on the community roundup for the 18th. You can find the link to that in the forums. In the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Moving on from this, there's a bunch of our one community video this week, animation scene. Work claws. Oops, I'm sorry, I wasn't routing the sound through you guys. That would be why you didn't hear that. I will start again.
Take two.
Yo, dude.
Yo.
There's something on your face.
What? What is it? Get it off.
Okay.
And then he just got him with his claws. So it kind of goes to show what the power of Dragon Claws used to be in the PvP scene. All right, so that's pretty much it for the community roundup this week. And as always, if you have something for the community roundup, just email it to community@jagex.com. All right, moving on from this, there's another BTS video, this time just a bit of a roundup of stuff you can do in order to get ready for RuneScape 3. So in this video, they go through some pre-launch tips and whatnot, some of them including updating your graphics drivers to make sure everything will work properly, of course, playing the World Wakes and doing the God Emissaries jobs if you so want to do that, and the origins of Gilinar motion comic that was released earlier this year.
Cool.
So it says, finish what you're doing, because in most circumstances, you'll be teleported to Lumbridge when you first log in and the battle kicks off. If you're in the middle of something important, be sure to finish it off.
So in other words, don't be doing anything important.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. They're telling us to be sure to finish off what we're doing, because they're actually going to teleport people to Lumbridge this time. I know the only time in the past they did that is when you were in an area or something that was removed, or you couldn't stand there anymore in extreme cases, or if you were in a member's area when you became free to play. So it's a pretty unprecedented move to put everyone out to Lumbridge. But anyways, so that is what you can do to get ready for RS3. You been doing anything to get ready for RS3? All right.
Went into the beta a couple of times. That's about
it. Well, aside from that, nothing?
Nope.
Okay. Today, what I did with regard to getting ready for RS3, I just cleaned the bank up a little bit. I mean, the bank's been kind of growing ungainly since the end of last year with all the things that have been accumulating from Squeal of Fortune and not whatnot. I cleaned them out and made some room in the bank just in case there's anything that needs to be picked up. So that's my version of preparing for RS3. I'm happy with where I am right now, so we'll just have to leave it at that and see what happens next week.
Sweet.
All right, and just a bit of a note to everybody out there. They are running some scheduled maintenance this week, and most of it's already gone by. But if you do try and log in this weekend on Sunday the 21st between 8 and 9 a.m. BST, which is roughly around 1 a.m. midnight Pacific, you could experience some server lag. And they say that you should not participate in any risky activities here because it could potentially result in loss of items when the server connection goes bad. So that's on the 21st of July and the 23rd of July as well. And they do have a link to convert the time zones, but that is midnight Pacific and 3 a.m. Eastern if you're on RuneScape around those times on either the 21st or the 23rd. So you have been warned.
And someone's going to complain that they didn't read.
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing is going to happen inevitably. And, you know, it's good they made a post about it this time after what happened after the Virago release. So, anything else?
PM me your pictures of your interface.
All right. With that being said, we're going to take a bit of a break from the usual swing of things, and instead of doing questions this week, we're actually going to do a focus on Virago. You'll remember that a couple weeks back when Virago came out, we didn't exactly have a first-hand experience on how to fight the guy, and we got that now. Just before the show today, I sat down with Zant, and we spent a bit of time talking about Virago and how exactly you can fight this boss and just the requirements that are needed, and let me say, they are extreme. So let's have a listen to that now. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another segment of RSBNB Update Focus. For anyone who hasn't listened to one of these before, it's a little segment of the show where we go in depth on a particular subject. We've done them in the past on things like farming, evolution of combat, grand exchange, flipping, you name it. A couple of weeks ago, when Virago came out, I promised that we would go in depth on Virago and how specifically to fight this creature, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. Zant from Informer is joining me for this.
Hello.
You might remember him. He was on last month when the level 90 ranged update came, and we talked about the Ascension.
Order of Ascension?
Yes, Order of Ascension.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the exact name. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I was too.
All right. So, basically, a bit of a recap for those of you guys who didn't listen to the show a couple of weeks back, or if you're listening to this at a later date, Virago is a NPC that you can kill. He appeared in July. He is north of Falador, and you have to go through a little cave to get to him and run through some agility shortcuts and whatnot and chat with him first before you can actually fight him. And that's, of course, what we're going to be talking about today, just how you should go about fighting such a creature. Recap for those of you guys who haven't gone down to fight Virago. This is the toughest NPC in RuneScape, and perhaps one of the hardest to kill ever released and requiring a huge, huge amount of preparation. Just a bit of an overview of Virago. He's combat level 240, about 250,000 life points, and can hit you pretty hard depending on your group configuration. So let's start with that sound. What should we be looking for in a group to successfully defeat Farrago?
Well, in my experience, I found that a group of about 12 to 15 was ideal. It can be done with less people. Most of the teams I've been seeing with my clan that have been doing it, they've been doing around 10 to 12. But I found it to be better with slightly more people. Because once you get through the fight, your group tends to decrease in size because people start dying and you can't rejoin the fight. So you're stuck with who you're left with.
Right. And is this because most of the fights you'll be competing in are instanced or as
well,
to why
you
they can't rejoin?
Well, they can be instanced and they don't have to be instanced. The main reason you can't rejoin is if you go into the little lobby area where you can talk to Farrago and when you start the fight, when you actually start the fight with him, he disappears from that lobby until he's either killed or he kills the whole team. So nobody else can join, nobody else can start a fight in that world unless they make an instance.
All right. So you say between 12 and 15 people, and one of the things we talked about on the show when this update came out is that when the fight starts, there's a very, very large amount of damage that's spread across the entire team. And if I remember correctly, if you had five people, that would equate to about 5,000 life points each. So it's about how much?
For five people, well, it's total 50,000. So okay. Five people would be 10,000
right.
Each, which
okay.
Is barely tankable.
Yeah.
I think you could. It would be possible to get it so you could do four if you have the best life point boosting stuff in Rocktail Soups and that kind of stuff. But I don't think you're going to be killing this with four people.
All right. So after you, of course, survive this initial burst, your group needs to weather that, and then you go into the usual fight. Now, speaking in terms of group configuration, you say between 12 and 15 people. How many of each type should we bring? Do we need to bring dedicated tanks for this? Do we need to bring dedicated mages? Do we bring melee folk? Or what do we bring in terms of a group composition?
Well, you need a few designated people that are going to for sure be able to tank the boss for a short amount of time. And also for certain parts in the kill, you're going to need designated people for certain tasks. One of them has to climb up the wall and jump on his back. One of the people has to collect the weapon pieces. So you just have to designate people to do that for the fight. And as far as different combat styles go, as for just doing damage to him, anything really works. All three styles are fine. You want to have a little of each on your team, so I've noticed more people like to use melee on it for some reason. I like using ranged personally, but it really doesn't matter what combat style you use.
All right. Now, going in from this, you need a bit of everything, of course, on the team, and you said you prefer ranged, so you've provided us with a ranged loadout that you wear when you're fighting Farrago. Do you want to run through a bit of it?
Okay, so of course, all these can be downgraded to equivalent items, but I use Death Lotus with Ascension Crossbows, and you want to bring a shield with you as well, and the action bars I use are included in that, so you can take a look at that. And cool little thing I found. If you use Ragefire boots, the boots with the class, it doesn't affect your damage. It doesn't increase it for having a different class. So using magic boots actually gives you some nice melee defense for being a ranger. So that's something I do that's a little bit different.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then you want to have the penance aura so you're not using a ton of super restore potions or prayer restores. And if you're up for it, bring a Scrimshaw Vampirism.
Which does, for those of us who aren't ports people.
You can actually buy them from the Grand Exchange if you want, the tradable version of it. And what it does, it kind of acts like Soul Split, and it stacks with Soul Split. So when you deal damage to enemies, you restore some life points.
All right. So just a generic setup here of ranged tank armor, primarily with the level 90 crossbows. I don't suppose you've tested this, but what is the lowest that you could go in terms of downgrading? I assume you could downgrade to level 80 in Chaotix.
Yes, that's completely possible. Most of the people I've been with a lot of them don't do player on ports, so they use like the next gear. And I've even seen people, like the first couple days when I was doing it, I just did it with a very huge team where not really high requirements to get into the team, and people were doing it with like level 70 gear, like Bandos, Armadil. They were doing it just fine. But if you're getting down to lower team sizes, like I'd say about 12, you should probably try to use the best gear you can.
All right, so in other words, the more people you have, the more free you can be with the kind of gear you're using. So have you ever seen anyone use Barrow's gear, like Carl's?
No. People don't really like seeing that in PVM.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now transitioning from this, what would a minimum overall level set be for this? Like, what's the minimum ranged level, defense level, and constitution you would go into this with?
I would say absolute bottom minimum 90 for each.
Okay. Is there any specific reasons for that, or just that's where the damage threshold becomes usable against Virago in this case?
Yeah, specifically because there's this one part where there's a few parts in the battle where you just have to be able to put out insane amounts of damage to progress forward. And that really becomes a lot easier if you have above level 90 in your offensive stats.
All right. So minimum levels of 90 across the board. That sounds good. All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about with regards to your loadout and action bar setup before we move on to the actual fight itself?
Just one thing I want to mention about the action bar. Make sure you have at least one of the moves that makes you move forward or backwards faster, like escape or surge. Because there are certain parts in the fight where you get bombs thrown at you. And if those hit you while you're around the team, it damages other people. So if you use one of those abilities really quickly, it'll get you out of there so you don't hurt your enemies. I just want to stress that you really need to have one of those in your bar. A lot of people don't really make use of those.
Yeah, and you have escape listed here on yours.
Mm-hmm. I just like that when it goes straight back.
All right. Oh, I also see you have Virago defensive.
Yeah, that's for when you use the shield. You'll probably have the shield on most of the fight, except for when, like I said, there's certain parts where you need to put out the most damage that you can. So you would put the offhand weapon on for when you would do that, and just have the shield on the rest of the time.
All right. So following from this, we got Virago himself. So tell us a bit about the attacks that you'll face when you're actually fighting the NPC. Because I know you already mentioned you get bombs thrown at you, but what else is there?
All right, so he basically has pretty strong melee attacks that he does all throughout the fight. That's probably his most basic attack, and the bombs, he uses those fairly often. He can use them on every phase, and there are two different types of bombs. There's ones that are blue, which get thrown at you, and you can actually, there is a way to avoid them, but I've heard, but I haven't exactly figured it out. And that hits you for some pretty heavy damage, and it'll spread to your teammates as well. And there are also red bombs that get thrown at you, and these ones can be particularly dangerous. They can hit up to about 7,000. So you definitely want to make sure that you have your life points up really high throughout the fight.
All right. Any other interesting attacks that he throws out?
As far as his normal attacks that he uses all the time, it's pretty much the same, but he has attacks that are unique to each phase that he uses.
All right. Well, let's just discuss the different battle stages then. Five stages, right?
Yes.
All right, so how does this work?
All right, so pretty much each stage, the goal is to collect a part of what is called the Maul of Omens, and the parts of the Maul are kind of like wedged inside Vrago's body, and when you get through a phase, one of them gets pulled loose, and you can collect it. And it should be noted that only one person should be collecting them, because one person has to assemble it and use it at the end. And this weapon is what is used to eventually take him out. And each different phase is actually on a different stage. So every time you switch phases, every time you finish a phase, he starts jumping around the room like crazy. And then he breaks the floor, and then you fall through down to another floor.
Oh, wow. So not only does the battle setup change weekly, mm-hmm. but it also changes inside the actual battle itself five times. Yeah. All right. So at each one of these stages, does the I assume the strategy used to protect yourself and, of course, deal damage will change as well.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And how many of these different stages have you fought through? Because they change each week.
Well, each week, they're very slight changes. The main changes that happen are around the third stage so far. And, yeah, the last few phases can change, too. They're not really big changes.
All right. So would you say that they added in an element of needing to recalculate strategies like Jagex was hoping for in this case? Or is this just another one of those things that has been brought in, it's nice to have, but it really doesn't throw a wrinkle in determining how you fight this guy?
I think so far, we haven't known what's coming for each week, so that adds something very interesting to it. And if they continue to do that, I think the goal was that each week they would like change something about the boss, like they would actually change something, so say week one wouldn't be the same as week
right.
some week way down the road. But if they just keep rotating, I think it's going to get to the point where people just keeping track of what week it is and what he's going to do. But I think they really overemphasized how it changes, especially like in the behind-the-scenes
right.
videos.
Yeah, because I know that's something that was mentioned in behind the scenes. And this, along with the actual AI of the creature, did you find that the creature seems smarter than, for example, the Calphite King?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
in what way?
He really does. He's very good. Like, it's kind of hard to describe, but I can't exactly say.
All right, so in other words, it can adapt to the tactics that the team is using.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, just another question going back to the battle stages. When you're in these stages... is there time in between each stage for you to recover, or are you just immediately thrown right into the next one?
There's a few seconds to recover. Like I said, he breaks the floor, then you fall through, and then
okay.
everyone's kind of there. And then a few seconds later, he just plows right down the middle.
All right. And just before we went to record this, you said that you were going off to a Vrago fight. So... if you could, just maybe give us a bit of a rundown of what each of the stages were like on this one.
Okay, so the changes don't really start happening till the third phase, so the first and second phase have been the same so far. But on the first stage, it's pretty simple. He does most of his basic attacks, no really special attacks. But once you get his HP down, he will start healing up to about 40%. Unless you get someone to go up on the cliffs and you have to jump on his back. And this can be incredibly difficult with a team that doesn't know what they're doing, because you have to designate a person to do the cliff jumping. And the hardest part is you have to position Vrago just right so the person can jump on the back. You have to make it so he is flush up against the wall, so the person can jump on him, and his back has to be facing the person perfectly 180 degrees.
Wow.
So okay. A way you can do this is you can position him on the spot, then have a person that's on the other side that the other side of him that the person needs to jump onto, have them do a provoke, and it'll make him turn around to them.
All right. So that's why provoke was listed on one of your action bars.
That and something in the second phase.
All right. So does that pretty much cover the first phase then?
Yes, but when you eventually get someone climbed on his back, his HP will go all the way back down to like it's supposed to, and then the piece of the maul will be dislodged, and you can pick it up, and then the phase ends.
All right, so pick up the maul, phase ends, you're on phase two now. So phase two, looks like.
Okay, this phase, he can do some very nasty melee damage. He targets one player, and he can do some smash attacks that deal up to 4,500 damage. He usually does five of these during the phase, and a good way to counter this is, so one person doesn't get hit by all five, is have different people on the team provoke him after he does one of the attacks. So it's kind of spread out through the team. And once he does this about five times, then it's safe to just continue on with the fight. But if he starts doing this again, it's beneficial to you to start provoking across the team. So the damage is distributed fine. One person's not getting completely owned.
All right. And of course, while you're doing this, you need to be firing off your bolts and whatnot. And everybody yeah. else has to be firing off their abilities in order to, of course, deal damage to him.
So far, these first two phases, you really need to have your shield on because you need to provoke. And if you saw on the action bar, I put a few defensive abilities, mainly resonance and preparation. You can use those to help you heal a bit. Make use of those because they really do help.
All right.
And to keep progressing through this phase, he will put out these things called gravity balls or orbs or something like that. There's this big red sphere that appears in the room, and you have to get someone to stand behind them and click on them, and they will go thrusting towards him. And you have to ram it into him. You have to ram three of them into him, and then he'll start to stumble. And you'll get this cutscene of your characters like trying to bring him down to the ground. I don't think you can really do anything in the cutscene, but it looks pretty cool. The camera angle's nice. But after that, you get about 10 to 20 seconds to do as much damage to him as you can. And if you do enough damage, the weapon piece will be dislodged. If you don't do enough damage, it'll be loosened, and you have to go through that entire process again.
All right, hence why damage output is essential.
Yes.
Makes sense. Now, all right, phase three.
Okay, this phase, he starts calling on some minions, and this is where the changes start happening, mainly with the minions. So the first week, what they would do is he summoned two minions called Scopuli, and it was only two of them, and they were supposedly, people have been calling them like twin Scopuli, because what they do is they try to move closer to each other during the fight, and the closer they get to each other, the stronger their attacks become. And they can get really strong, like extremely accurate, constant 2,000 damage. Mm. It really hurts if you keep them close together. But you can get someone to provoke them and move them away from each other, and that would make it so they wouldn't deal as much damage. Once you kill one of them, the other one becomes enraged, and it does higher damage until it dies. So once you kill those two, you can take down Virago and finish the phase.
All right. So that was week one. What did it look like earlier today?
So today what it was, it was, he summons a lot of different ones, not different ones, but multiple Scopuli. They don't do as much damage, and they can like block you from walking around certain places in the room. And if I don't exactly remember how you stop this from happening, but if you don't do something right, on the fourth phase and the fifth phase, they can still be there. And with what happens in the fourth phase, that can be very bad.
All right. So in the third phase, how do you move on past it? On week one, you said you had to kill the two Scopuli. And how did that work today if there's multiple of them? Did you guys kill all of them, or did you just deal enough damage that it dislodge the part?
I think it, we just did enough damage that it dislodged the part, because we still had some of them hanging around on phase four. But I thought you had to kill them all, so I only did one kill today, so yeah. And he has, also this week, he has this attack where he slams this giant exploding rock into the ground, and you can destroy it. And if you destroy it, it does like 4,500 damage to you. Ooh. And surrounding teammates. And when he puts it in the ground, if anyone's standing under it, it does really heavy damage.
And this was still on phase three?
Yes.
All right. So after you deal with that, phase three changes, of course. If you're listening to this in the far-off future, it'll, of course, be different. What about phase four?
Okay, phase four is the phase that can be the most problematic to people who do not have voice communication with their team. I cannot stress enough that being on Skype or TeamSpeak or something of that nature will really help you in this phase. But Vrago does his basic attacks like he did in stage one, and he has also this attack where you get a message on the screen that says he's about to do a very powerful fire attack. And then you get these, like, it looks like fire around your screen, actually kind of on the interface. And there are four waterfalls in the corners of the room, and one of them is actually running when the attack starts. So if you walk under and stand under that waterfall, you won't get hit by the attack. And if you're not in the waterfall, you will get hit for over 10,000 damage.
So in other words, you're pretty much dead.
Yes. You either get under the waterfall or you eat up a lot.
Okay. And while you're under the waterfall, I assume everybody is just firing the standard attacks toward him in order to cause damage and dislodge the part.
Well, actually, when he is charging this attack, he is invulnerable. So you cannot do any damage to him while he's doing this. But there's a lot of time in between when he does these attacks. He only does them about every few minutes.
All right. So in other words, then, if he's not charging up, just attack him as normal?
Take it to him.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take this cue and move quickly on to phase five. So
okay,
phase five.
Phase 5, it's the bottom level of the dungeon, and you're on this platform that's surrounded by some water. And this is a true test of the amount of damage you can put out and the rate at which you can do it. Because what you have to do is, I see it kind of like a tug-of-war game, but opposite. And as you do more damage to him, you're kind of pushing him to one edge of the level, and you have to push him off of it. So, and he can also push you off, too. So if he's doing a lot of damage to you and you're not doing enough damage to him, he can actually drive the team backwards. And if one of your characters gets pushed off, you automatically die. So
all of the team or just that one character that got pushed off?
I've never actually seen it happen because we've been pretty successful with it. But I would imagine if your whole team's back there, he'd push your whole team up.
All right. I assume if that happened, you're pretty much done, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And once you get him to the edge, he will fall down, and that's when the player who has a completely assembled Maul of Omens will step in, and you'll get this nice epic cutscene of him running up Vrago and, like, hammering his head with it. It's, like, it's kind of nasty, actually. He starts spewing this, like, really colorful stuff. And then he dies, and you get the drop.
All right. So that is a run-through of what a Vrago fight would look like. How long does one kill take that we just described here?
The first kill I did, I think it took about 23 minutes.
Woo!
But a few of the teams I've been with, we've done it in about a little more than I'd say about 13.
Oh, okay.
But people have done it in way less, I'm sure.
So you theoretically could get maybe about four of them done per hour if you were quick enough, maybe five.
Yeah. It seems like a really big hassle when people, after the kills, getting everyone going to the bank,
right,
and getting more stuff. Sometimes it seems like there's like 10 minutes in between kills sometimes.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually, with so many
depending
people
on other people
going to bank and whatnot. That was even a problem back in the old days. So
yeah.
All right. So, As we discussed on the episode when this update came out, there are a couple of interesting pieces of rewards that you can get. First one is the Seismic Wand and Singularity. Have you got any of these yet? Or got
actually,
any splits?
Actually, I haven't done any coin share yet. I've done loot share, but I actually saw somebody get one, and loot share was my second kill.
Oh, wow.
I've only done like 6 kills, though, because this thing takes a while. But,
all right, so you haven't got any of those specifically for yourself yet. Okay. And then the second one is the tectonic energy that you used to make the level 90 armor. Now, from what I understand, this is fairly common. How many of these do you get per fight?
Well, it's a guaranteed drop, and he drops two at a time, and he can drop up to like 3 sets of 2, so 6. And it divides between people. So one person gets 2, another person gets 2, etc.
All right, so it's fairly safe to say you can get around 2 per fight, maybe if you're lucky, maybe some runs you'll have a dry streak then.
Mm-hmm. They're pretty easy to get, but considering the team sizes, 6 across 15 people,
right.
if you're actually trying to get the amount you need to make the armor, it's going to take you a while.
All right. Now, just one question on this. Do the groups that go to Virago feel that the rune crafting requirement to make the armor is too high?
I don't really discuss this too much, but personally, I think that it should be this high, because this is the highest level gear we have in the main game world right now. So having a high rune crafting level on it is something that really should be there.
Yeah, no, and this is what they discussed last year with the rune span, that rune crafting is now actually going to be the primary method of making armor for mages. So it's understandable.
Yeah, that started with the player imports with the Sea Singer. I think previously, like in Dungeoneering, you would make mage armor with crafting.
Yeah,
out
that's
of
right.
The stuff you pull up with the farming.
All right. Are there any other rewards of note or final pieces of advice that you want to bring to us here today?
Just a piece of advice. Try to have voice communication with your team. It makes it so easy not having to type.
All right. So let's just say then that voice communication is a must, and level 90 plus would make things a lot simpler in terms of stats. So
yeah,
there you go. Anything else before we say goodbye?
That's about it.
All right then, thank you, Zant, and hopefully you guys out there have found this helpful to figure out as a starting point about how to slay Virago.
Good luck killing Virago.
Thank you, Zant, for that. And if anybody has any further questions, you can just send those off to Zant. He's a member of the Informers, so you can just click Informers down there and find Zant's name. Send him a PM on the forums if you have any further questions. All right. So, we know how to fight Virago now. We're waiting for RS3. And in the meantime, let's talk some tech. So, this week, VLC comes back to iOS. Now,
ooh.
I know this probably doesn't this doesn't matter to you because you're an Android user, but for us iOS users, when VLC came out 2 years ago, it was something that was good, and that it allowed us to play media files that we normally wouldn't be able to play on our devices. So we were a bit surprised when it disappeared, and we were thinking maybe Apple pulled it because of something in that it's doing something illegal. But no, it turns out that the reason VLC was actually pulled way back when was because of open source licensing issues. So VLC is back on the App Store, the US App Store at least. I haven't checked the Canadian one yet, but it's available for the iPhone and the iPad. And it's got all the features that you would want for VLC, including AirPlay, network streaming. I don't think there's any built-in way of iOS to do network streaming, so that's good. background audio playback, subtitle support, video filters, and Dropbox integration. So this is really good because as a media player, anybody who's used VLC will know that it can practically play any media format under the sun. So that's good because it lets us use this and then, of course, AirPlay that to our Apple TVs and whatnot, which is a great thing to be able to do and not having to convert files in the meantime. So I'm happy about that.
Yes, VLC is quite nice.
Yeah, and it's got the nice little pylon icon, kind of like the one that my Pyro wears on TF2.
You mean the cone? Cone of Shame?
Yes. Oh, is that what it's called? The Cone of Shame? From Plants vs. Zombies?
It's a safety cone. No, it's a safety cone. You fool, that's why it's orange.
I know.
It's a thing you should put on the street when you don't want cars driving into it.
I know, but I call those pylons.
Wrong. You mean pylo?
Pylons.
Pylo.
What is that again?
A pylon.
Okay.
Pylo.
Anyways, pylon. So if you're an iOS user, check out VLC. It's available again on our platform. So go download it. All right. Now a question for you. Would you use a Facebook board game, or rather, would you play a Facebook board game?
That depends. Do I have to log into Facebook?
No, and that's the exact reason why someone has made a Facebook board game. It looks pretty much like a Monopoly board. It's got things, cards that you can draw, like called like and status, so you can pick up a status or like something based on that. Also, there's things like forgot login, account suspended, refresh page. So it's a lot like Monopoly in that regard.
Let's see. Let me try to get a bigger picture of it.
Yeah, if you click on the images in the store, you'll see exactly what it says. But the idea is to get people to put their phones down and to actually interact with one another in the real life. So if you're using Facebook on the internet, why not play Facebook in real life, you know? That's kind of the strategy here.
Yes, but I think the market for this, in my opinion, is going to be kind of the 7 to 13 age group, because most adults don't play board games anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing. As a young person living in the digital age, the designer who made it says, I feel as though the internet is affecting our ability to communicate with one another. Research done by Stanford University has indicated that social networking sites like Facebook can increase loneliness, depression, and insecurity. Facebook, the board game, was created as a response to this. The idea that instead of engaging with Facebook on your computer or phone, you can arrange to meet up with friends, have a few drinks, and play in real life.
You know, all they need to know is the drunk girl status.
Huh?
The drunk girl.
What about it?
You know, people, you know how Facebook works. It's a bunch of pictures of drunk people who passed out.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing with it. So,
you know what? That should be? That should be a railroad.
Yeah, and you know, exactly. The statuses take place at the railroads. As some of the things you need to do, like video, share a video that you've recently watched, event, arrange another event with your friends, unattended PC, reveal something embarrassing about the next person to leave the room, break up. If you're in a relationship with a player, break up. There's also things for your account being hacked, your account's being suspended, so miss a turn, birthdays. like if somebody says or shares something that you like during the game, why not like it?
Drawn on face.
Oh, is that here as an example?
It should. It probably would be. I would.
Okay.
You passed out at a party last night. Your people draw faces on you. Lose a turn because you have to spend all day washing it off.
Yeah, so, I mean, it would definitely be interesting to play something like this to see what Facebook is like when you actually put it in terms and you're physically doing the actions you have there. So, another thing, tag a player who you'd like to drink. I'm not sure what that means, but okay.
Oh, you know what? You know what I kind of think this one would also do is this may cause more riots.
Oh, how?
They should make a card that says, tell the person next to you the truth. Do you like them? Yes or no? Oh, that's going to cause some riots.
And you know, that's the thing. People do these things on Facebook all the time. And, I mean, you don't think of it when you press a button on a website or when you tell someone off on the internet. Now, do you? If you do that in real life, I think people would think twice, right?
I think if you did this in real life, things wouldn't be going your way. But then again, that's the shield of the internet.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right. Anything else on that? Do you want to pick one of these games up one day if they ever go to market?
You know what they should really do? Well, actually, that's kind of a bad example, but would be nice if like we had a little board game like you, me, Mike, and Kala and Reek could all play just to mess around one night when we don't feel like doing anything really mind-numbing.
Mind-altering? What mind board game would we play?
Hmm?
What board game would we play? Facebook board game?
Sure, let's do it. That's the only time you ever get me on Facebook.
Oh, that's great. All right. So, hope you guys have enjoyed that, and let us know what you think about that, because, you know, Facebook's everywhere, and some people just totally need to disconnect from that. All right, so let's move on to something a little bit darker, perhaps. Microsoft lost $32 billion in stock value on Friday.
Ouch.
Ouch indeed. The stock plummeted 11% on Friday after the earnings report pertaining to Surface and Windows 8. So investors were not happy about that. The stock finished at $31.40, off $4.04 per day. That percentage decline, which wiped out more than $32 billion in stockholder value, was the biggest slide in Microsoft stock since the year 2000.
What happened in 2000?
Well, you know, the whole dot-com bubble burst around that time.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's what happened then. And, you know, it's just really too bad to see this happening. And I guess it means that people are not embracing Surface and Windows 8 like Microsoft would like them to do, and the investors are not happy about that. But it's extremely odd because Microsoft actually turned a profit this quarter. They had a net income of $4.9 billion compared with a $492 million loss this same quarter a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But,
You know the old saying, you gotta fall in order to stand up again.
Yeah, I guess. And you know, when you think about it, in the past, tech stocks have really been high, particularly Apple and Google, and they both kind of went down. So I guess it's okay that Microsoft did this. It's not the end of Microsoft. It just signals that maybe Microsoft needs to retune its marketing once again for Surface and Windows 8.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you and I had this discussion before of what Microsoft needs to do to draw people from Google and Apple to them. So, you know, the thing is funny is that I've actually been seeing a lot of in TV show advertisement for like Surface and Windows 8 and everything else, which is kind of funny.
Oh yeah, product placement is plentiful for Surface and Windows 8.
I was like, are you serious? Like this full on blown, like, oh great. It's like watching Iron Man 3 and there's an Oracle sign right in the truck, or in the 1995 van. Really? Oracle was cheap enough to provide them a sign and equipment for a 1995 white van.
You know, we say it might not be all bad, but there are...
No, we find it... Me and my brother-in-law, we find that funny. We actually point them out. It's like, dude, do you see that? Yeah. Dang.
Okay. But, you know, the problem with this might be is that Windows sales also fell 6% as well. So, I mean, like we said, it's marketing, but Microsoft really needs to do something about this because they're still not seen as the popular choice for most people to go with. I mean, people would rather use an iPhone compared to a Windows phone. Well, most people. If not, they'd use Android.
Maybe I should switch to a Windows phone. Get Nokia back in the game.
I mean, from what I understand with Windows phones is you really need to have both feet in the Microsoft ecosystem. I mean, that's not something most people would like to do, and that could potentially be why here. But I don't know. Regardless, just keep this in mind, I guess, if you're thinking of what Microsoft's future might be. They might be, based on this, announcing some sort of departure from previous strategies. So, I don't have anything else on this. Are you good to go?
Yeah, I got none.
All right. Well, that's it for tech news this week. So thank you for listening to that portion of the show. We're going to talk about the skill of the month now, dungeoneering. What do you make of this? You're a dungeoneer.
So what are they changing this time?
No, skill of the month.
Oh. Let's see. Yeah.
Because Zahara Knight is still in first with 24.1 million experience. Second place, JM Andy, 52, with 17.6. And then distant third, based on that, we got Flash at 4.5. Recently taking the lead this week over X-Blades at 4.7. And a div at roughly 4 million. So that's a top five. But a month is more than half over now. We got about 12 days left. Do you think this is done?
No, if he stops. Yeah, you know, if he stops and people actually go all dungeoneering mad, not impossible.
Yeah, but I think it's out of reach for... everyone except JM Andy 52.
How many days
unless, like you said, like 19 days, 24 million XP, average of 1.3 a day. I mean, it would be possible if Flash maintained that rate to catch up to JM Andy, but it would not be possible to reach this 24 million if Zahara Knight was to stop. So. That's why I think this one's over. So it looks like we're going to be in a race for third at this point, unless somebody from third, fourth, or fifth really steps it up to go for the 18 million XP mark. So,
awesome.
All right. So we got a bunch of achievements of the week this week, a good selection of them. From all walks of RuneScape life. First up is Eon with 99 fletching on July 18th.
And we have Mr. Panda. We got 99 mining on July 17th and 99 woodcutting on July 17th.
Congratulations there. Then we also got Parnassius who got 99 Constitution on July 15th. Congratulations to you. And then some noob by the name of J1, J2, J3 got 99 magic on the 14th.
Yeah.
You know, that name is such an easy name to type.
You still failed it the first time, remember?
Yes, unfortunately.
No, we still have a screenshot of that somewhere on the interweb.
And finally, Eon also got 99 woodcutting on the 12th. So congratulations, everyone. And it's nice seeing a bunch of multiple 99s in that group. All right. And just a reminder to everybody, we do have a new Informer article this week. This one comes from Alex43. It's a review of Bringing Home the Bacon. And he was hoping it would be funnier, But I'll let you guys read the article and determine what his, in his mind, was his most favorite quest. It'll be a shocker, I guarantee it. I know it's a quest that both you and I despised, and I don't know if you'd ever do this one again, but...
one small favor?
I didn't find that quest funny, if that's the one that he's thinking of, but, yeah.
Oh, that was not a small favor. A small favor is done in 5 minutes.
Anyways, so head on over to informer.rsbnb.com and read that and see if you agree with Alex in this case. All right, time for pick of the week. I have a pick this week. It's yes, I do, actually. You want to take any guesses as to what it is?
Does it involve the internet?
Yes.
Does it involve a country? A foreign country.
Multiple countries.
Let's see. She'll always involve technology with you. Involve a space?
Nope.
I don't know. Space?
All right. It is a website and iPhone application, Android application. The iPhone application is $2.99, but you can use it for free on the website with ads. It's a website that pretty much shows every plane in the sky at the current time in a pretty nice format, too. The website is called flightradar24.com. So what you can do is you can just head over to your local city and see what's in the air above your heads. Most of them are pretty accurate. There are some that aren't, based on the type of plane that it is and what kind of radar coverage you have in your area. But if you go to pretty much any metropolitan area, you'll see that most of them update in real time, which is really nice. Because what you can do is you can not only see the path that they're taking, but you can click on each little icon in the map that shows where they are. But when you do that, it'll show you its altitude and all the stats and everything, vertical speed, airspeed, that sort of thing. So if you're interested in what's above the sky and whether it's coming down or going up, you can definitely have a look at this. And if you want to see something very interesting, what you want to do is, let's say it is evening time wherever you are. What you can do is you can zoom out the map to your entire country. And if it's evening time, I guarantee you that you will see a huge, huge selection of planes in the sky. But if it's the middle of the night, you'll see that it quiets down a bit, except in certain areas. So one thing really interesting to see is that around the time it is right now, if you zoom out to North America, you can see that it's very, very busy. But if you look over to Europe, you see that it's pretty quiet because it's the middle of the night. So you can just track them along the way, and I mean, it's pretty boring once a plane reaches the cruise speed, because you don't see any changes in the status except for changing on the map. But you can look them up and look for past routes as well and replay that. One interesting thing that I haven't had a chance to do with yet is to look at that plane crash 2 weeks ago in San Francisco on here. That would be an interesting route to look at.
Especially after the accident.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the kind of granularity we're dealing with here. There's another website in the past that can do this, FlightAware, but this one does it better in that it's a nicer presentation, so that's why this one's here. So, have a look and see what you think.
All right.
All right, so what have you been up to?
Oh, I spent the week getting a couple of days getting 99 magic.
Finished up, yes, right. Finally. We did mention that.
Let's see. What else did I do? Did the Citadel. Did one or two runs of Dungeoneering. Ended up finally getting 90 thieving, and I'm finishing up all the port stuff quests for the thieves. The thief. There you go.
Right, the thieving portion of the ports.
And I actually ended up getting quite a few decent masks from the squeal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I got some of those too, like the Slayer ones and everything. The higher level ones, like the Gargoyles and the Abyssal Demons, actually do provide decent armor. So if you're going to fight these, you might as well use this over the Slayer Mask, because I was discussing this yesterday, and Slayer Mask is just pitiful in its armor value nowadays. And the only reason to use a Slayer Mask is to have the protection that it affords if you're fighting something like Spectres or Banshees. So, but yeah, I definitely agree. The Slayer Masks are good to have, and if you're running short on bank space, you can just destroy them and then go pick them up from Diongo for a modest fee in Drainer Village. Cool. Anything else?
Anything else that I do? Yeah, besides the port. Oh, I finally got the Mage Port armor. Finally.
Oh, is that the... what's that called again? I always get the mage one confused.
Yeah, that one.
Sea Singer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It's good. Always nice to have some high-level armor like that. All right. As for me this week, not much. Like I said last week, just pretty much put the character to sleep a bit until RS3. So I just cleaned up my bank, like I said. Cleaned up some of the things that I can't destroy, like the court summons that was sitting in there. So I did that, completed my 10th court case, so I got the barrister top. And after that, I have this clue scroll that I'm going to do a bit later, so we'll see if anything good comes from that, but I'm holding my breath because last time I did a level 3 clue scroll, I got about a reward that's worth about 11k. You know, that's always... That's so disappointing these days, you know, getting a level 3 clue and not getting good rewards from it.
I end up having a level 2 clue that I finally had the time decided to finish it up.
Uh-huh.
It took me from Ardonye to Varrock, back to Ardonye, back to Varrock, back to Ardonye. And I was like, and then I finally got something, you know, it was around like 30k. I was like, man.
Well, you know, the level clue scrolls are at... The level 2 clue scrolls are actually worth doing because you can get the ranger boots from them.
Yeah, the problem is that, I don't know, it kind of felt like I was being led astray because I kept going back and forth.
Yeah.
I would teleport from one side of the world, back to the next, then back, then back, then back.
Yeah, and you know, those ones are always so annoying when you spend upwards of a half hour doing them and you don't get anything good from them, so... I understand your pain there.
As for me, I'm going to spend this weekend doing something I should not be doing.
Which is?
I am going to No Life Total War Shogun 2 until I beat a campaign again.
Well, you know, that's entirely allowed because, you know, we do need some time to deal with just giving us a break so that we're fresh when RS3 comes around.
And I'm going to get me some trading cards off Steam. And I have not bought anything off of the Steam summer sale.
Okay.
You know why, though?
Why is that?
I'm lazy. I swear to God. Here, I tell you the truth. I have exactly $1.52 in my Steam account. In my Steam wallet. I am too lazy to go upstairs and grab my wallet to get the cards, and I am too lazy to actually go and log into PayPal. Oh, screw it. Forget I'm not buying anything. That's exactly why. No BS.
All right.
I am too lazy to go grab my wallet.
That might just be a good show title. And with that being said, let's wrap this one up and say that we'll see you guys all next week with our discussion of RS3, which, if rumors are to claim, should be very, very interesting to see what is going to be actually going on in the world. See you next week.
Remember, my competition, 5 mil up for grabs. Last day, August 23rd.